Dance of the Devil, the Cozy Apparel story, is, strangely enough, the story of the drummer himself, Richie Blackmore, who is notoriously not forwards and coming backwards with praise. Once said, you can't get any better than Cozy, you know. He's always up there on stage going crazy. He always pushes me when I look around. He always gives me that incentive to play because Cozy won't let anybody take it easy. He wasn't wrong. Cozy Powell was a talented, reliable and versatile drummer. He's played with Jeff Beck, Rainbow, Michael Schenker, Whitesnake, Emerson and Lake, Black Sabbath and Brian May, as well as being a hugely in-demand session player. But there hasn't been a book about him, really, until now. Delighted, a pleasure, an honour to welcome to the show author of Dance of the Devil, the Cozy Power Story, Laura Shenton. Laura, good afternoon to you.
Hello, thank you.
Glad you were there. For a minute there, I thought you'd gone home.
No, I was enjoying listening to the music. It's just such a feel-good song, isn't it? Happy days.
I was just saying, that takes me back to, I mean, I was of a certain age, and my parents gave me a black leather fringed jacket, and that was what I wore, I think, to I started going to sort of youth clubs at that point, and that Rainbow was always playing when I walked in, so I always remember that as a callow youth. So, Cozy Powell. I mean, people will know him because of Dance of the Devil, which I'll play in a little while. But he was the drummer's drummer, and he was just everywhere in the British rock scene from basically the 60s onwards.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he was so prolific, and it just blew my mind that a book hadn't been written on him already. And I thought, well, it's been a while, nobody's done it yet, I'll do it. And I think it's an incredible legacy, you know. And the book, the emphasis really is on his music. I mean, if you want to know what he was like to have a cup of tea with or how many pets he had, might not be the book for you because I didn't know the guy. But what I did was a hell of a lot of research, and, you know, the book really hones in on his legacy. That is to say, all of the sources used in the book, there's a lot of quotes from the man himself. And I think that's really important. I thought, let's put things in there that are based on what he said at the time. And you've got also like the details of how he did like a lot of the recording techniques, especially for the Rainbow Rising album. So, I mean, as a drummer, he was just phenomenal. And I just feel that, you know, let's put this legacy in writing. Let's get it down.
Where did it all start then? Because he didn't sort of spring fully formed into Rainbow Rising or Dance of the Devil, did he? I mean, he was there or thereabouts with those seminal English sort of rhythm and blues bands of the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he worked really hard. I mean, like a lot of musicians that time, like Blackmore, indeed, he started out touring, gigging in Germany. You know, I mean, he described in a lot of interviews about how unpleasant that actually was. I mean, it was proper sort of living, you know, day to day. And even before, you know, his hit with Dance with the Devil, he worked really hard. And the thing is, his discography, it's tremendous. I mean, so much so that it's very unlikely we'll ever know how extensive and expansive that actually is, because of course he was a session musician at a time when session musicians weren't even credited.
I mean, you've got to be just thinking, because you had Jeff Beck, who was a session musician. Jimmy Page, of course, famously was a session musician, wasn't he? He played with loads of different people, and Cozy was one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's testament to the skill he brought to the table as a musician. I mean, he did so many different styles and genres as well. I mean, what he did with Emerson and Lake was so different to what he did with, you know, Sabbath and Rainbow. And I think it's really important to sort of get that across to people, that the versatility was just phenomenal.
One of the things that I love about sort of mid-70s, well, sort of late 60s to sort of 79, 82 sort of heavy rock music is the fact that if you were to draw a family tree of who went where, especially with Rainbow, because they were getting rid of people, Richie was getting rid of people left, right and centre, but it makes sort of the Game of Thrones sort of house, banner houses look like a, you know, look like an A to B sort of line, don't they? I mean, you look at the bands he played with, you know, he was with, you know, Jeff Beck, Rainbow, Michael Schenker, Whitesnake. I mean, just two of those bands would do you fine. But, playing with Sabbath as well.
Oh, yeah, that's phenomenal. I mean, to contribute that much musically, I think that's incredible.
So who did you, I mean, you said you researched, I mean, presumably you went through magazine articles, book articles. I mean, how did you get the stuff together to actually write the book?
Yeah, I mean, that was quite easy because I'm a massive hoarder. I'm a massive fan, so there's a lot of vintage articles in there. And the reason I did, you know, like Sounds, Melody Maker, that kind of thing. And the reason I did that is because I wanted very much to... I'm just the narrator. I very much wanted to tell the story from the perspective of the people who were there at the time. And as a result, I didn't actually interview anybody for the book, and that was extremely deliberate because I didn't want it to read like something, oh, he was this really great guy and isn't it sad that he's gone? You know, I hope somebody else actually writes that book because it's a legacy to be told, but it's not my place to tell it. So this is very much a book about the music, and we're lucky that in the interviews that Cody Powell did, he wasn't that candid about his personal life, and I thought it's not my job to delve in that regard, but he told, you know, in interviews he was very open about what he thought about the music, you know, his opinion on drum machines, his opinion on working, you know, getting the best out of the studio, getting the best out of the live audience, and that's all in the book really, and that's what I wanted to get across with it.
And so what was, you know, what were his opinions on things like drum machines? Because obviously when he was doing stuff in 82 or the early 80s, of course, you had the new wave, the new British wave of metal, which was Def Leppard and Iron Maiden. But at the same time, in the charts, you had people like, you had computers were starting to take over in music. You were starting to see Pro Tunes come into the music industry. You were starting to see, you know, bands like Depeche Mode and Erasure come, not Erasure, and Yazoo come to the fore, who, you know, had drum machines.
Yeah, there's a great interview he did with Kerrang. I think it was either 82 or 83, and he really complained about drum machines. And you know, in the early 80s specifically, it was a time where a lot of fantastic drummers, he said this himself in the interview, they were actually out of work as a result of, you know, the rise of the whole new wave thing. And considering he stayed consistent, you know, right through the 80s, you know, into the 90s, that's really incredible. But yeah, his position on drum machines, he made it clear quite candidly in several interviews. So it was really interesting reading about those, and indeed, they're all in the book as well. But he did not like drum machines.
And what was he like? Because, I mean, did he have a preference to, presumably because of his background and spending a lot of time in the 60s being a session musician, he didn't mind being in the studio. But, I mean, he really came to the fore when he was on stage. I mean, as I said at the opening, Richie Blackmore said, you can't get any better than Cozy. He's up there on stage going crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that I quoted Blackmore there in the blurb. I think he said it in Sounds magazine in the late 70s, that one was. And yeah, it's that whole kind of thing. Like, he was just brilliant on stage. I mean, the Rainbow Bootlegs, they are so worth listening to. I mean, they really get across the difference between the studio sound and the on-stage sound, and you know, I think they're so worth a listen, and I've listed those in the book. I mean, it's very much a fan book in a way. It's by a fan for the fans, and I'm not claiming to know anything beyond that, but there's so much out there that's been archived, and I thought, let's put it together, let's get this all down, and, you know, if anyone's looking to listen to recordings that are a bit more niche, are a bit more difficult to get hold of, that's all in the book. And Cozy himself, you know, he said, there's so many instances in interviews where he said, you know, about what you can do live compared to in the studio, and you know, it's worth knowing about.
It's interesting, isn't it, as well, because you said, you know, there's a book for a fan written by a fan, and in other genres of music, apart from maybe Charlie Watts or something, you wouldn't have people who are fans of the drummer. It's like being a fan of the bassist. I mean, people write reams about Hendrix and reams about Clapton and Beck, but it's a rare thing to write about Cozy. So, you know, this is very much a labour of love for you, Laura.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, out of all the bands he played in, I'm a massive Rainbow fan, and the book could have easily turned into a book about Rainbow. But to be fair, that was 5 years of his career, so, you know. But yeah, I just thought, you know, everybody in Rainbow's had a, you know, like, well, the main lineup, the definitive lineup that a lot of people say is the definitive lineup. You know, there's a book on Blackmore, there's a book on Dio. I thought, Cozy Powell's not had one yet. That's terrible. Right, I'll do one. So that's really how it came about. I just thought, you know, and there's that really awful joke people tell, oh, who's the guy that hangs out with the band, the drummer? And it's like, no, that's not true. The drummer's really important, and especially in terms of what Powell contributed to Rainbow. I mean, every album he's on, it's stunning, isn't it? I mean, you played Long Live Rock and Roll, and, you know, the drum fills in that are incredible.
Yeah.
The technique he used as well, you know, using two pedals, that facilitated, and he said this himself, which I've gone into detail in the book, you know, it facilitated speed, facilitated a much heavier sound. And I think that's very much something that defines Rainbow when, you know, in that era prior to the 80s.
Well, if you think about it, because when Motorhead started playing with two like that, that was in 1980, really, around the same time, but they were much heavier thrash. And then sort of Metallica and Anthrax came along and did it. But, you know, Cozy's doing that, as you said, it in 1978. And you can really tell the difference with Rainbow when he leaves and it gets very much more sort of transatlantic in the outlook?
Yeah. I mean, the book goes into a lot of detail with regards to Powell's feelings on the direction that Rainbow was going in. I mean, personally, I think all eras of Rainbow were fantastic, but in the interest of being objective, I sort of went into a lot of detail about what Powell said about why he was no longer happy with Rainbow. I mean, he always, as versatile as he was, I get the sense that he always prided himself on the sort of heavy stuff. I mean, even in his early band with Bedlam, that was some really heavy drumming. Listen to that album, everybody. Seriously, it's one of those that kind of gets overlooked. But again, this was the purpose in writing the book. I just really wanted to celebrate musically what he did with his career.
And also, I mean, he spent 5 years with Richie Blackmore. I mean, that's a medal in itself, surely, because Richie Blackmore isn't the easiest guy to get along with. And also, he worked with...
Apparently not.
Well, just slightly. And then, he worked with Whitesnake, and David Coverdale as well is known to be a bit, shall we say, as well. So, you know, he there's a, you know, he was also with Sabbath and Tony. So, you know, he stuck around and he played with some of the, you know, the biggest and perhaps the more eccentric figures in the heavy rock world.
Yeah, definitely. I find that really fascinating because there's so many instances in which he played with people who might have been difficult characters to work with, but I get the sense he was very, no pun intended, very down to earth because, you know, in a lot of interviews he always said that, well, if this goes wrong, I'll just go back to the racing. It sounds like he wasn't so big on the whole fame thing, perhaps. That probably empowered him when it came to dealing with egos. Again, I'm just the narrator and I'm just referring to the research I did, and it's really important to me to stipulate that I'm not speaking on behalf of him or indeed anybody else he worked with. But certainly from, you know, the vast number of interviews that I researched and included in the book, that's very much the impression I got. I mean, it strikes me that he had the skill to work with a lot of weird and wonderful people, you know.
That down-to-earth pun, a few people will be laughing their socks off with there, Laura. But, you know, if you're not a Rainbow fan, we probably won't get that last one. But also, you said, like I said, I mean, you said he'd go back to the racing because he lived next to Brands Hatch and he likes to sort of have a thrash around the circuit now and again.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I mean, anyone who works in a business like, you know, music, I imagine it's very consuming. And I think the fact that he had things he could have done outside of that, that's awesome, you know.
What do you, I mean...
That's out of the book, really.
Yeah, I was going to say, the title of the book is obviously what he's best known for, you know, Dance to the Devil. And that was, if you like, it was a pop song. It was 1973. It was Mickey Mouse, for goodness sake. What was his reaction to that, do you think? Did he get any interviews or any thoughts from him about becoming briefly, you know, appearing on Top of the Pops as a pop idol?
Oh, yeah, there's loads on that in the book. Some of the things he said in interviews were so funny and so candid in terms of it wasn't necessarily what he was most proud of musically, but commercially it was what got him where he wanted to be. And really, the title of the book, it's also very deliberate. I deliberately not called it the biography because it's not the definitive, here's the man, the person. It's very much, here's the musician. So the book is very much from that angle of it. But I think that's what he's most known for. And it just kind of works.
It does indeed, and people will know that and they'll smile. It's a great thing about, I mean, kids in the 70s playing on the old desks that used to be able to bang up and down.
Yeah. He did a really funny interview where it was something about like a whole class of classroom of kids, like they were so taken by the single Dance with the Devil, like they were drumming it out on desks at the time. I mean, this is before my time. I mean, Powell passed away when I was in primary school, but you know, I love my music, so.
And that's perhaps one of the things, the fact that, you know, the music, I mean, the man himself passed away in 88 after a road crash. But the music keeps going and his legacy keeps going. Do you think that he's got, you know, he's influenced so, I mean, if you mention rock drummers, that, you know, you think Ian Paice, you think, but Cozy's one of the first ones that you think of as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a legacy that's going to be remembered for a long time. I mean, Rainbow Rising is nearly, it's crazy to think it, but it's nearly 50, you know, give it a couple of years, it's going to be like 50 years old, and it still sounds fresh, I think, anyway. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same.
Absolutely. In fact, I might just go stick it on the turntable when I get home today. The book is called Dance with the Devil, The Cozy Powell Story. It's out and out. Laura, if people want to find more information about you or about the book, where did they go to? Is there a social? Do you have a web page?
Yeah. No, I don't. No, I'm very much engaged with the subject matters. I'm actually quite a shy person. But to buy the book, go to the Weimer website. That's WYMER. That's the publisher. You can get it direct from them. But if you can't remember that, just Google the name of the publisher.
And
Weimer,
also,
and you'll be able to buy it.
It will be available as a digital download as well via the Talk Radio Europe bookshop as well. So we'll get some shekels sent to you as well, Laura, for that one. Okay.
Wicked.
And what would you say, if people who may have not have heard of Cozy Powell before, what would you say, apart from Dance the Devil, which I'm going to play now, what would you say would be a good introduction to Cozy? The Rainbow Rising album?
Yeah, that's the obvious choice, and indeed anything he did with Rainbow. But also his solo work, that's a hidden gem. His solo album of, well, one of many, Over the Top, give it a listen, because it really shows what he was capable of, not just as an individual, but when working collaboratively. Really good album, give it a listen.
The book is called Dance with the Devil, The Cozy Powell Story. It's by Laura Shenton. I'm going to play out with Dance with the Devil. Laura, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you. Be well. Have a good day.